Our show is supported by Be My Guest with Ina Garten, Ina's official podcast from Food Network, back for its fourth season. On every episode, Ina invites a different friend to her home in the Hamptons to talk about life, love, and career, all while cooking up an amazing meal. Join Ina as she crafts a classic cocktail with journalist Frank Bruni and discusses the ins and outs of Yorkshire pudding with actress Emily Mortimer. If you're looking for great conversations about and over good food, tune in to Be My Guest with Ina Garten. Listen to Be My Guest with Ina Garten wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is the show for curious cooks and eaters.
It's Mother's Day for all of you.
Now, I knew Kwame Nwachi was a great chef and storyteller, but I did not know he had such smooth pipes. Anyway, that was Kwame singing the dulcet tones of Mother's Day, so happy Mother's Day to all mothers, children, and people with mother figures. And for the mothers, we hope you get to spend it exactly the way you want. Our dear friend Melissa Clark, a mother herself with a kids' cookbook no less, will be with us a little later with an unusual and frankly kind of brilliant Mother's Day tradition. We eavesdrop on a conversation between a mother, Caroline Shin, and her mom, Chungja, about a Korean soup you make for moms right after they give birth. And of course, we have Chef Kwame. Honestly, when our producers and I were talking about what we want to do for a Mother's Day show, our first thought was to call Kwame. It's because in his memoir, Notes from a Young Black Chef, he writes about how he got his start in the kitchen watching his mother do catering gigs for music videos out of their home. And she's continued to work as a chef as he's gone on to win a James Beard Award and start a new role as executive producer for Food and Wine. So we wanted to get the two together to tell us more about their relationship. Jewel and Kwame, it's so good to have you.
So good to be here.
Yes, it is.
All right, so I wanted to get right into it. Jewel, because I got to read what he had to say about you when he was growing up, let me ask you, what was Kwame like as a kid?
Oh, my God. Kwame was always in trouble from pre-K to he went to a gifted daycare center. He was always in trouble there.
Well, don't skip over the positive parts. We're trying to be positive.
This is all positive because this is all leading up to what your personality is like, because you're always doing things. You know, you're always striving for the next thing. And unfortunately, when you're a little kid, it seems to come across as being in trouble all the time. So, you know, I think that kind of spirit transformed itself into a positive thing, you know. And of course, that would be like when you're a kid, you know, destroying my kitchen and making it all happen.
So wait. How did you know when he started to love food?
Kwame was, he always fooled around in the kitchen, just experimenting, doing crazy things like trying to burn Skittles. Yeah. But I think the defining moment was when he made this curry dish with the shrimp and the jasmine rice, and he plated it up really nice and... Mm. I still can taste that dish. And we're from Trinidad, right? So, you know, we eat a lot of curry, a lot of Jamaican curry, Trinidadian curry. Mm-hmm. But this was just really, really good. And I think that was the defining moment.
Yeah. Kwame, do you remember that?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember it. Like it was yesterday. Yeah. My family was over. I think my aunt was there. My stepfather's like cousin was there. And I, you know, used to just read the pages of Food and Wine, and I came across this dish, and I was like, oh, I can add this, you know, instead of like macaroni, I could use like jasmine rice, and you know, I made this like kind of like Pan Asian curry dish with like sherry and hoisin and oyster sauce, and you know, like Trinidadian curry powder,
yeah,
and a bunch of aromatics, and we made it like spicier and like added, you know, the stuff that we have around the house, so like a little bit of pepper sauce to it, a little bit of Creole spice. And yeah, I remember just being like really proud when I made it and it came out, and like everyone was like really, really interested in it and like excited about it, and it was gone in like 2.5 seconds.
Yes.
Wait, how old were you?
I think you might have been like 10
or 10 come on, 9,
something like that. Yeah, yeah.
It and was... you were like, we got people coming over tonight, we got family coming over. I got this.
I got this, yeah.
I'm 10.
Yeah. Pretty much.
He was always a prodigy. Wait, let me ask you this, though, because, like, at that point, Jewel, had you begun catering?
I actually probably wasn't doing catering at that point. I think we were living in Harlem then when he made that dish.
And you actually got your start catering for videos, right? Music videos.
Yeah, so I did it kind of backwards. Like, I didn't know what I was doing, and I just happened to get this gig. And so I was like, oh, and, you know, I just did it. You know, I made some mistakes. I had some triumphs. And then I decided that I would go and work with other caterers to actually see how it's actually done. And that's what I did. I did it backwards. But the reason why I did catering was so that I could be home with my kids.
Yeah.
So getting into catering, I actually have a degree in accounting. And it was, I worked for a production company that produced television commercials. And they decided that they were going to move their office to LA, and I was out of a job. And so I was like, well, you know, people are always talking about my food, so why don't I just do something with that? And I called some of the directors, and they were like, sure, we do catering on the set all the time. They were like, send me over a menu. We have a shoot coming up. It was when that Cinnamon Toast Crunch commercial first came out, like a gazillion years ago. Well, I catered that. And that was my first job.
Oh, man.
Yes. And then it just morphed into, like, music videos. And so, you know, I've done, like, Queen Latifah, Naughty by Nature.
Yes.
Dos FX.
Yes. Wait. So I'm sorry. Kwame, at this point, were you like, Mom, why are you hanging out with Queen Latifah and Tretch?
He didn't know anything.
I was like 6 years old. I had no idea what was happening at all.
I am that much older than you. Come on, man. Yeah. Wait, so Kwame, so tell me. I mean, obviously you have your cooking style is your own. You have, you know, it's inspired by your travels. You are living in many places of the world. But what of your cooking or your cooking life did you feel like you got from your mom?
Seasoning for sure, but also just the Creole background and exploration of food. I think what I got from my mom is like try everything, you know, like not being afraid to try food. And then because she was so inquisitive, it led me to absorb different people's cultures a little bit easier. You know, even though she was dating a Nigerian, she liked the goosey stew enough to, like, learn the recipe herself. You know, not many people would do that just because they like someone else's cuisine. You know, figuring out how to make even, like, the bottled jerk paste taste a little bit better. You know, so it's like seasoning something, making sure it's at optimal seasoning is something that I learned from her. And attention to detail in that manner.
Have you cooked together? Do you remember the first time cooking together?
Yeah, we've cooked together. I mean, in the kitchen for the catering company all the time. It was a place that we would spend time together. So it was beautiful as a child to be cooking next to my mother. You know, because growing up in New York City, your parents are working a lot all the time. So that's a time that you can sit there and, like, actually have a conversation and laugh and joke and just be amongst each other's presence.
Yeah. Joe, what did you think when he told you he was going to be a chef?
Well, I think it just, it was something that happened gradually. He had worked with me in New Orleans at the catering company and was kind of miserable with that. And then the Horizon oil spill happened, and then he wanted to go on the boat and cook for them. And I think that's when he started to enjoy food, because the men on the boat were just ecstatic over his food.
Yeah.
And he didn't have a lot of experience at that point. I had a Dean and DeLuca cookbook from a gazillion years ago, and it has like everything in it. Like everything you can possibly want to make that is in that book. And he took that book with him when he went out to the Gulf, and they loved his food and he loved cooking.
Yeah.
And then when he left, he says, you know, he says, I'm going to go back up to New York and and see what I can do up there. And it just kind of morphed. It was like, it wasn't a definitive kind of a thing. It just kind of happened. And his excitement continued to build up.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I've always told my kids, I don't really care what you do as long as you're happy while you're doing it. And I can see his enthusiasm with it.
And it's definitely one thing to have a skill in something, another to feel like you have a connection to it. Kwame, when you were on that job, I remember reading about it. We've talked about it before too. You had a bad boss and mm-hmm. and all that. But do you remember it that way? Do you remember that experience as when your connection to the act changed?
I would say I always loved food. You know, cooking professionally, maybe that's when, you know, it turned the corner. But I liked cooking at home. You know, I was always like experimenting. You know, I was making cakes when I was like 7 years old, you know, just putting flour and sugar and eggs together and just seeing what came out. Or, you know, always I watched probably Cooking Channel more than Nickelodeon, you know, so food has always been something. But like as far as a profession, yeah, she's right. It wasn't until like I got on that boat and I saw that like actually making someone happy in masses, you know, straight from my interpretation of, you know, whatever, you know, dish I was making for that day. And that's when I became addicted to the craft of cooking, that like chasing that high of like someone saying like, thank you, this is really, really good. Because up until that point, I was only doing it for my immediate family. And then to do it for the general public and for it to be received well, I was like, okay, I can probably do this. You know, I can do this for more. I can do this for an unlimited amount of people, you know, once I got bit with that bug.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing like seeing someone react to what you've done.
Yeah.
I totally hear you on that. So now that when you are together now, do you cook for each other?
Yes.
Yeah, all the time.
All the time.
What do you love cooking for each other? What do you love to make for each other?
When I was in L.A. last, I made a huge pot of gumbo that was like the christening of the house, with the gumbo smells all running throughout the house and
super good.
Yeah, so yeah, super good. Yeah, we're always cooking and eating.
Yeah, it's always an act of love, you know. Before we even say that I'm hungry, we're normally cooking something for each other.
Right.
Wait, do you always christen his homes with gumbo? Because like I need to get on that train.
I think so. Every time you've come, you make gumbo, yeah.
That's the thing. Like, if you come to my mom's house, you'll have gumbo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you come to my house, you'll have gumbo. Yeah, that's a thing.
But hey, so what do you like to make for her, though?
I don't know. I'm more of a go to the grocery store and see what looks good kind of person, you know? Mm-hmm. She has a signature dish. She's been doing this longer than me. So, like, I would say, I mean, a curry and oxtail, the things that I make really, really well, but it's like if there are crabs at the market that look really, really good, we're having crabs. You know, if there's steak there that looks really good, we're having steak.
Yeah. And Jewel, how does it feel to you knowing the son used to just get in trouble in the kitchen all the time, and now he's coming around, a lauded chef, a media personality, and he's cooking for you now? How does it feel to be eating his food?
Sometimes it's kind of surreal. Sometimes I just can't believe that he's done all that he's done in his 31 years. You know, I'm very, very proud of him, very happy for him.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I'm having an out-of-body experience, you know, like I'm just looking down with just total admiration at what he has accomplished and what he's done and that he's happy. Because, you know, you can do this in this life and not be happy.
Yeah.
And so I think that he is, you know, very, very happy with himself and with what he's accomplished and where he's going.
It's lovely.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, thank you both. Happy Mother's Day, y'all.
Thank you. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
That's Chef Kwame Onwuachi and his mom, Jewel Robinson. Kwame is the author of the memoir, Notes from a Young Black Chef. You can see his return to Top Chef as a recurring judge this season. And you can find his recipe for seafood gumbo at splendidtable.org. No, we did not get Jewel's recipe. For that, you'll need an invite to her house. Coming up, the New York Times' Melissa Clark takes on your Mother's Day and springtime cooking questions. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is The Splendid Table from APM. Our show is supported by Hero Bread. You know, for a lot of us, bread has been a staple all our lives. Toast at breakfast, sandwiches at lunch, a nice buttered roll at dinner. It's comforting and delicious, and bread is often what we crave, but sometimes it can sit a little heavy after a meal. That's where Hero Bread comes in. They've created fluffy, delicious versions of the breads that we're used to, but that include no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and fewer calories. Oh, and there's more good stuff too, like protein and fiber. Hero Bread has everything from your daily sandwich loaf to tortillas or hot dog and hamburger buns. The products are flavorful and they have something for every craving, from a dressed-up breakfast burrito to a late-night PB&J. They even have monthly small-batch drops of indulgent treats like 2-gram net-carb Hero Croissant or the 1-gram net-carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit. Don't give up being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code TABLE at checkout. That's table at hero.co. Our show is supported by Be My Guest with Ina Garten, Ina's official podcast from Food Network, back for its 4th season. In every episode, Ina invites a different friend to her home to talk about life, love, and career, all while cooking an amazing meal. Listen as Ina does what she does best, make good conversation and delicious food, while making it sound fun and easy. This season, Ina dives into conversation with astronaut and colonel Nicole Mann. As Ina teaches Nicole how to make seared scallops with celery root puree, they talk about everything from family to what foods Nicole really craves when she's in space. And listen in as Ina and Pulitzer Prize-winning writer David Remnick talk about music lessons and the value of developing language skills before joining their spouses for a lively conversation over a comforting dish of chicken parmesan. If you love a good chat over a great meal, you'll love Be My Guest with Ina Garten. Listen to Be My Guest with Ina Garten wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is the show for curious cooks and eaters. Look, we all know the real day to celebrate mothers and mother figures is every single day, but we also know that May 9th exists this year. And maybe instead of going out for brunch, you want to make something. Better yet, have something made for you. Anyway, for help with all of that, we called our dear friend Melissa Clark of the New York Times, author of many cookbooks, including Kid in the Kitchen. Hey, Melissa, happy Mother's Day.
Aw, thanks, Francis.
So, do you have thoughts and feelings about Mother's Day?
You know, so many.
No, I ask because, like, I'm not proud of this, but I was looking back on my life, and I was like, okay, what are the memorable Mother's Days of my life, you know, from when I was growing up or, you know, now that I am married to a mother. And I can't think of like a single one, which might mean I'm just a terrible son and bad partner.
Well, I think culturally it means different things in different families, right? You know, I mean, when I was growing up, it was all about my mom, obviously, and she always wanted to go to the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens. Like, that was her thing. But can I just tell you, everybody in Brooklyn wanted to go to the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens on Mother's Day. And it was like, it was always just a zoo. And I was just like, oh God, do we have to crowd in with all those people? So it's a little different in my family now that I get to be the mom, you know, it's like, I get to choose for once. So I know this is going to sound kind of crazy, but you know what our tradition on Mother's Day has been? And don't judge me, okay, Francis?
So
I'm not into breakfast in bed, frankly. You know, it's like I'm very active. I get up in the morning. I want to do things. And Mother's Day is one of the 2 days a year, Mother's Day and my birthday, where I get to choose what I want to do and I get to kind of control my family. So I make them clean the windows with me. Okay, it's like a whole family thing because it's springtime and it's like you can open the windows without it being cold and I want the sunshine to come in and they're dirty after the winter. So I make my family, they do it. We get the newspaper and the vinegar spray and it sounds awful, but it's actually kind of fun. We put music on and it takes 45 minutes tops and then we're done and everybody's happy because it's like, you can see outside again. So that is our Mother's Day tradition. I'm embarrassed to admit it, but it is true.
That sounds great.
Yeah. And then, you know, we'll get a treat afterwards. Like we'll walk over and get donuts or something. Or, you know, I mean, we don't have like a food tradition, but, you know, I get to pick. So whatever I'm in the mood for.
Right on. I'm glad we're having this conversation. Because look, when I was growing up, I don't remember Mother's Day. I really don't. And I think part of it was you know, we were just not a particularly holiday celebrating family. But I think the other part of it was like, you know, what, especially when I got to like snot nose, like 14, 15, 16 year old me, where I was like, whatever, it's corporate Hallmark holiday, but it's not a real thing. You know, like I was probably like a jerk about it and like thought I was being cool and like counter programming the world. And just realized like, no, I'm just a jerk. I just like, here's a chance to like make my mom feel nice. And I didn't do it because I thought I was being cool, you know, like great. Now I have to live with myself. But you know, now I should be doing that more. And I truly don't have like any ideas. Cause there isn't like a tradition to fall back on. I don't even know what Mother's Day's supposed to look like, aside from brunch.
Yeah, I know. Mother's Day brunch is a thing. I was going to say, you could always fall back on brunch, make a brunch reservation. Why, Francis, why is brunch a thing on Mother's Day? Do you know why?
I don't know why. Do you know why?
I don't know why.
I wonder if it's not just, well, mom usually is the one who has to cook for us. And so here's a way of making a nice event and not having her cook for us as the first thing of the day. Maybe that's why it's brunch and not dinner.
Yeah. And also, I think, you know, assuming that there is, you know, young kids involved, if you're a mom and you have young kids, or you're an older mom and you've got grandkids, you got to think brunch is the time when it's good for the whole family to get together with the little kids. I mean, that makes sense for me for why brunch would be the thing. Well, I guess you're going to have to ask your wife what she wants. You guys are going to figure it out together.
Maybe that's the move. Okay. So, let's actually get to some food. We have a ton of callers who called in with Mother's Day cooking questions. And also just because like, hey, it's springtime, right? It's May. It's starting to be beautiful. Just like springtime cooking. So you ready to get to it?
I am. Let's do it.
All right. Let's start with Peter.
Hi there, calling from Cincinnati. So I'm calling with a question regarding cocktails. Mother's Day is coming up and I would love to have some like boozy drinks and non-boozy drinks that I'd be able to offer with the fam. Do you have any options or any ideas? Thanks a ton. Bye.
All right, Melissa.
Love that. Got to have good libations. And I like the idea of doing a drink that you can, you know, spike, but also that's kid friendly, you know, because obviously you're going to have kids at Mother's Day. So I love that notion. I love to make a simple syrup, like a flavored simple syrup, like a rhubarb syrup or a mint syrup with fresh herbs, and use that as the basis for like any kind of drink, right? And then you can have like lemonade for the kids, or you could have gin and tonic for the adults, and then just, you know, add the syrup. And it just turns it into an instant cocktail. I don't know. What do you think? I feel like there's so much potential there.
I love that idea. Okay, well, walk us through how you make the syrup.
Okay, so simple syrup is really easy. It's 1-to-1 water and sugar. So you know, a cup of each, and you just simmer it until the sugar dissolves. And then, you know, you want to add whatever flavorings you have. So if rhubarb, what I would do is I would cut up a couple of stalks of rhubarb, not too much rhubarb, just a little, because we're not making a compote. We're just adding flavor and color, and simmer it down.
That'd be a beautiful pink, right?
And, yeah, beautiful pink. And exactly. Yeah. And simmer it down just until the rhubarb gives up its color and the syrup, you know, you got to taste it. It should taste rhubarb-y, frankly, which is like a little tart, a little fruity. Or same thing with mint, throw your fresh mint sprigs right into the pot and simmer the syrup until it tastes minty. And it doesn't take long. It's like 5-6 minutes. And then let it cool and then strain it. And, you know, if you can find lemon verbena bunches, it might be a bit early for that, but that is a great thing to do. Or you could do a spice syrup with a cinnamon stick and a star anise, or like a teaspoon of fennel, which I love. And then, you know, again, just let it simmer and then let it cool and strain it, and it'll keep in the fridge for weeks and weeks. In fact, I think we have a mint syrup in there from like December, and it's fine. So, you know, just keep it in your fridge and use it whenever.
Oh, right on. Actually, I love the idea of, so instead of really focusing on, oh, what are the mixers and what are, you can make a bunch of syrups.
Exactly. And then let people mix it to taste. So you put it out in a pretty pitcher. And then if you have like a bottle of seltzer and a thing of lemonade, or just even a bottle of seltzer, and then for the grown-ups, you have your whatever your spirit of choice is, and maybe some tonic water, some orange juice, and just let people play. I mean, I think people really love to make their own combinations, but you're giving them this amazingly flavored syrup. So it's going to like be festive. And if you do rhubarb, it'll be pink, which is always very pretty.
Yeah. I love it. Cool. All right, let's keep going to another question. Let's go to Patrick.
Hi, I'm Patrick from New York. My mom is always watching those kitchen gadget videos. Is there an actual good one that you can recommend that I can gift my mom?
I love gadgets and I love gadget questions because I feel like people always want to know like what the best gadgets are. And I have opinions. Francis, you must have opinions too, but I'm going to tell you mine and then I want to know what yours are.
I want to know yours.
I will.
First of all, I want to know your opinion of kitchen gadget videos because I feel like there's a whole internet subculture of like just people just watching kitchen gadget videos like all day long.
It is very satisfying. So it's so satisfying. Yeah. but the ones that I use personally, I tell everybody to get this. And I sometimes come across people who still don't have a microplane grater. And I'm like, you don't have one? And it doesn't have to be the brand microplane, but a rasp mm-hmm. grater. It is my most used kitchen gadget. I use it for garlic is the number one thing that I use it for. Because it instantly makes, you know, a garlic paste, which I use in everything. It's great for ginger. I make ginger tea all winter long. In fact, ginger is also great for your simple syrup for your cocktails. And you can just grate it right on there. And then lemon zest. It is such a pain to put lemon zest in a dish if you don't have a rasp grater, because then you have to use those like weird little punched out grater holes on your box grater. And those do not work very well. And you will bloody your knuckles if you try it. So please buy it. It's a $15 thing or less, you know, again, if you don't need to get the brand microplane, just get yourself a rasp grater. That is my number one gadget. What about you, Francis? What's your number one gadget?
I'm not that much of a gadget person, but I do love a microplane. This is now like microplane does not sponsor us, although maybe they should after this. the other thing I love about microplane is this is something I forget where I first saw this, but you can microplane nuts, walnuts,
really?
Hazelnuts. Yeah. And then like what happens is like it turns into this like beautiful nut fluff, which is two of the least attractive words you've ever put together in a sentence.
No. I love a nut fluff. Oh my God. You're blowing my mind. I'm already seeing the possibilities of nut fluff. On top of my granola, on my top of my yogurt.
Yes. It is a food.
It is a food. Yogurt with nut fluffed walnuts
And honey. So you get like all this flavor and this really feathery texture. And it's just like, it's just like an unusual thing you like can top pasta with. You can top even like, you know, I mean, you could, if you have like slices of pork chop or slices of, you know, chicken breast or something like that, you can shave some nuts on them. And it just adds a richness and depth of flavor. And like, if you add it on something hot, you won't really notice the texture that much because it just kind of like, it doesn't dissolve, but it kind of blends into it a bit. But it's just a really cool thing you can do. And all of a sudden you start, like, once you start playing with this thing, you start going crazy with like, what else can I just like grate really super fine and see what happens? You know, like, I love using it for garlic, like you said, even though I'm a little bit lazy about cleaning it. So usually I will just like smash the garlic and then chop it because, you know, that takes 4 seconds anyway. But yeah, to get a really fine shaved garlic paste that really kind of distributes the garlic flavor super evenly, it's a really cool.
Well, you know really where cool it's thing. You know where it's essential and it's better than chopping? Two places: salad dressings, because you don't want, you know, and I love a garlicky salad dressing, so I will use it. We use it a lot. But then the other place, and this is really interesting because people, you know, I'll do recipes with a marinade for a steak or a chicken, you know, just like a typical chicken marinade. You've got your chicken parts, and you have to grate the garlic because if you chop it, then when you do it over high heat, like, or for example, on the grill, or if you do it in your broiler, those little pieces of garlic will burn. But if you've microplaned them, it won't. It will dissolve and it doesn't burn. And it's just a much better way to add garlic to a marinade. So I have that. Changed my marinade prep.
Your,
and now
your
I
marinade
only
lifestyle.
Use, yeah.
Right on. Okay. So now that we're talking about garlic, I want to go to a natural partner of garlic. And let's go to Lucy.
Okay, dudes. This is Lucy. I'm in LA.
Sup?
And I have an anchovy situation. I have a really, really big can of anchovies, like 8 inches across, that I bought at an Italian market a year or two ago, maybe even more. And I think it's probably time to break it out, but I've been afraid to deal with it forever because I don't know how to keep, I don't know what to do with these guys. Do I rinse them? How do I keep them good in the fridge? What do I cook with probably a solid pound of anchovies, maybe even a little more? I need help. Thank you.
Francis.
I am like anchovy fan number one, but I just, even just the phrase, a solid pound of anchovies, just makes me go like, oh, really?
Okay. Can I tell you something really funny? The same thing happened to me during the pandemic. You know, when during the pandemic, when we were all ordering early pandemic, you know, we were all ordering things online and maybe we didn't really check the sizes. So I actually ended up with a huge can of, it was about a pound of anchovies, like this huge thing. And I thought, what am I going to do with this? So this is what I did. And I've actually used them up. Lucy, this is what you do. It's really easy. Open the can. Don't be afraid. Open the can and don't rinse them. I'm assuming that if you got them in an Italian market, they're just going to be packed in some olive oil. And all, if they are packed in salt, you do, I guess then you should rinse them and dry them. But in any case, take them out of their oil or their salt, repack them in smaller jars. And that's all you have to do. So get a bunch of like little jars that you had for jam, divide them up into, you know, 2-3 ounces or just, you know, an amount that you think you're going to go through in about a month. And then curl them up into that jar and try to use the smallest jars that you can so that you don't have to use a lot of olive oil. And then this is the important crucial step. Fill the jar with olive oil and make sure to submerge the anchovies under the oil because the oil is going to preserve them. And then tuck them away in the back of your fridge. And then, you know, for pasta dishes, you can use 2-3 ounces at a time. So use them lavishly.
Yeah. What's the pasta you like to do with them?
Just like, I mean, I do it real simple with just, I'll take my garlic, but this time I'll slice it. Oh, I've got another gadget for you. I love my little, I have a teeny little handheld mandolin thing that I use as a garlic slicer. So
really?
Yeah, it's like 6 inches. It's really small. And it's great. I just use it for garlic because I love, another way that I love garlic is thinly sliced for my anchovy pasta. And, okay. And plus it's red, so it's like pretty and it's a good gift. So we should remind Patrick about that one too. Slice a couple of garlic cloves real thin. Start the garlic slices in a pan with cold oil. That way you won't overcook them. Let them get golden brown. Then add your anchovies. And you can even, you know, you can leave them whole. Just throw them right in the pan. And as they're bubbling away, use a wooden spoon and just kind of chop them up. And they're going to dissolve into a paste. Keep it all over low heat. And then let that bubble, maybe a pinch of chili flakes, right? You don't need to add salt because you're using a ton of anchovies. And then I love to use lemon zest in that, just a little bit of lemon zest. And that is your sauce. And it is so easy. Toss it with your pasta, add some Parmesan, maybe more chili at the end, and a squeeze of lemon because you've zested your lemon. So just use the naked lemon.
Use it anyway, yeah.
Squeeze it right at the end. And if you want to add a bunch of chopped herbs, you can, but you don't even need to. It is the 5-minute pasta. We make this all the time. It is delicious.
Yeah. It's just so much like umami and depth in the anchovies. And I know people have this whole thing with anchovies that are like, oh, they smell, but like the aroma changes so much when you cook it. Like anything, if you're afraid of any fishiness, it really just turns into like a deep savoriness instead of anything you might think was like, ooh, that's like, that smells like a dock. Like there's like none of that in my experience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you use a good quality brand of anchovies, I mean, you know, there's a reason that a lot of us don't think we like anchovies. And the reason might be really, really bad. I remember when you were a kid and we went out for pizza at some point in your kid life and some grown up got anchovies on their pizza at like maybe a place that didn't have the best quality anchovies. And it was awful. It was like, oh my God, that smells like cat food. That is why. But buy good anchovies. Make sure they're packed in olive oil, and they're gonna be delicious. And then just cook them down. They're gonna be fabulous.
Yeah, right on. Hey, let me ask you one last question about anchovies. When you say you can store them in the back of your fridge, if it takes you a little while to get through them, would you freeze them?
You know, the only problem with freezing anchovies is that when you thaw them, it's gonna degrade their texture, right? Like a really nice plump anchovy has. Especially if you're going to eat it raw, like on anchovy toast, and you want the texture, then freezing is not your best friend there because freezing is going to degrade it. It's going to make it mushy. So what you want to do is if you do want to freeze your anchovies, just make sure to cook them. Use frozen anchovies for pasta. Use nice fresh ones, you know, fresh meaning right from the tin or, you know, from your fridge, and use those for your anchovy
fresh
toast.
From the tin.
In a manner of speaking, yes.
Right on. We're talking to New York Times food columnist Melissa Clark, and she's sticking around with us to take more of your questions. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is The Splendid Table from APM. Our show is supported by Hero Bread. You know, for a lot of us, bread has been a staple all our lives. Toast at breakfast, sandwiches at lunch, a nice buttered roll at dinner. It's comforting and delicious, and bread is often what we crave. But sometimes, it can sit a little heavy after a meal. That's where Hero Bread comes in. They've created fluffy, delicious versions of the breads that we're used to, but that include no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and fewer calories. Oh, and there's more good stuff too, like protein and fiber. Hero Bread has everything from your daily sandwich loaf to tortillas or hot dog and hamburger buns. The products are flavorful and they have something for every craving, from a dressed-up breakfast burrito to a late-night PB&J. They even have monthly small-batch drops of indulgent treats like 2-gram net-carb Hero Croissant or the 1-gram net-carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit. Don't give up being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code TABLE at checkout. That's table at hero.co. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is a show for curious cooks and eaters. We're talking with the wonderful Melissa Clark about Mother's Day and springtime cooking, and if you have cooking questions for us, whenever they strike, just record a voice memo and send them to us. contact@splendidtable.org. Now back to Melissa. Okay, so let's move to another caller. This is from Claire.
Hi, this is Claire from Baltimore, and this Mother's Day, I would love ideas for things that will keep well in my freezer for the next few months. My okay. husband and I have a 4-year-old son, and I'm pregnant with twins due late this summer.
Oh boy.
I like to cook, and I would like to stock my freezer for meals to have during those first few busy months after the twins arrive. I like to freeze things like beans, soups, and other wintertime foods, but I'm struggling to come up with ideas for things that I might like to cook and eat now in the spring and in the hot summer that would also freeze well if I make a double batch. Thank you for any ideas.
Oh, that's a great question.
Yeah, that is a great, she's right. Yeah. You know, she's absolutely right. Because, well, first of all, oh my God, a 4-year-old and twins. We are sending lots of wonderful good luck vibes and
happy Mother's Day.
Yes,
really.
Happy Mother's Day. So I think, but that's such a good point because I do always think of, you know, like the best things for freezing, the first things you think of are wintry things, right? Like stews and beans and soups. I think I would probably lean into sauces. I would lean into like pesto, you know, like get a bunch of basil and make a bunch of pesto or maybe chop up and cook a bunch of spinach. That's maybe like, I don't know, maybe I'd flavor it with garlic and just saute it until it's really compact. And then when you take that out of the freezer, you can use that as the base for almost anything. But I guess these are more like helpful things to help you make a quicker dinner later. But what are some things that she can just pull out and have that are all ready for her for summer? Maybe a springtime lasagna. Is that too heavy? Like a lasagna.
No, that sounds amazing.
Like, right? With thinking that that's spinach. Because everyone wants, you know, lasagna all year round, frankly. So maybe just make like a springtime lasagna with lots of spinach and herbs and keep it,
peas,
you know.
Peas if you get them right now, or asparagus.
Yeah. Oh, yes. What about an asparagus soup without cream?
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Just like a really light, brothy asparagus soup that you just pull that out.
Yeah, that sounds super great. I mean, the one thing I would say about something like asparagus, like those really tender, delicate, beautiful spring vegetables, is you want to make sure they are cooked before you put them in the freezer. So either blanch them or you're sauteing them, or if you want to do the lasagna, like Melissa said, which sounds awesome, like an asparagus, spinach, ricotta lasagna sounds fantastic. I would make sure to pre-cook the vegetables. So maybe blanch them first or just give them a quick roast. And the reason is if they go in raw, they might come out a little bit mushy. They might... Because when you freeze them, the water in the cells might pop the cell membranes. And then, you know, when you pull them out of the freezer and they defrost and they're just kind of like sort of sad and limp. But if you cook them ready, then you've already broken all those cells and you won't have that water sort of being purged out.
Yeah. You know, I just had a thought. Baked goods, right? We want baked goods all year long. So I'm thinking like, what if, you know how people always say to freeze muffins? But the problem with muffins is that they take up so much room in your freezer.
That was literally
so what about
that,
like quick breads, but, you know, maybe savory ones, like a ham and cheese quick bread, you know, something like, or a cornbread or something like that, that you know you're going to want to eat that with just even to have that in a big salad in the middle of the summer is such a nice dinner. So I would say like savory quick breads, cornbread, things like that, and just stock your freezer and do them in a loaf pan rather than individual muffins, just, you know, to save on space.
No, that's really smart. You might have a little bit of prep when you take them out, but like, why don't you make some like awesome taco fillings, right? Mm. And like, we always have tortillas, and like, if you buy corn tortillas, I don't know what it is about industrial corn tortillas, and it's probably not great, but they can last in the fridge for like literally months.
It's so true.
So we always have a pack of corn tortillas in the fridge. You can have some quick salsas, and then, you know, you can do some marinated pork or chicken that you can roast or grill and then pack away, or you can stew them in some salsa and pack that away. And then you can like bust that out, just warm up your tortillas, chop up a little onion, chop up a little cilantro, a little lime wedge, and just go to town. Like that's,
yeah, that's,
that could be so fast.
And that's so great for summer. That's like perfect. And you know, another idea, actually, you could do the same thing. With, you know what vegetable freezes really well? Roasted red peppers.
Mm.
And I love a red pepper taco. Like I love red pepper, you know, in the tortilla with your salsas and your sauces, because it has such great, you know, texture. And then I like to put some kind of cheese, like a Oaxacan cheese, you know, or a queso fresca or something on top in little crumbles.
Oh, I love that. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, Claire, we hope you have a great Mother's Day and many great Mother's Days to come. Let's go to another caller. Let's go to Paul.
Hi, this is Paul in Indianapolis. Just wondering, I'm interested in this concept of grilling on a plank, and okay. I've never done it before, and just wondered if there might be some suggestions on do you need to use a plank or can you use something else, and really what that does to the fish that you put on the grill. Thanks so much.
Oh my gosh, that's such a good question. Have you ever done that, Francis?
I have, not in a really long time. But yeah, but I think to his first question, I mean, if you want to grill on a plank, you should use a plank. I guess the difference is if it's just a surface, well, then you're just kind of like essentially griddling, which is fine, which is a perfectly nice way to cook something. But I think the point of the plank is like if you use a nice wood plank, especially a cedar plank that's an aromatic wood, part of the point is getting some of the flavor of the wood and some of the smoke.
Yes, you need a piece of wood that is flat that you can put your fish on, and you need to soak that piece of wood really, really well, because otherwise it will just catch on fire and you will just incinerate your fish. So I helped a chef a long time ago on a cookbook project, and we cedar planked many, many pieces of salmon. And I learned a few things. First of all, you just want that plank to be there for flavor. So it's the thinner, the better, frankly. And also the thinner it is, the more easily it will absorb the water that you need to soak it in, and less likely that it will, you know, suddenly flambé your fish. So try to get a thin piece of aromatic wood like cedar, soak it for at least overnight. And it's better to keep the skin on the fish, because that's providing just like this perfect little bed for the fish flesh to sit on. So you've got your wonderfully aromatic wood that you've soaked, you have your fish that still has its skin on, you season the top, and then you really, I mean, what's great about it, aside from getting the aromas of the cedar, is the way that it cooks it gets hot, but not as hot as a direct encounter with the flames. So it cooks it a little bit more slowly, and it's less likely to dry out. So it's a really, really nice way to cook fish.
And would you do it like medium heat, medium high heat? Like what would your grill be like when you're laying this down?
Yeah, you'd want it to be medium to medium, even medium low. You know, you're not, salmon cooks quickly.
So it's a little gentle. Yeah.
You don't need to be in a rush. And you're not looking for the char on the fish itself. You're looking for the char on the wood, and that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So you can do medium, medium, low.
Okay. And do you cover?
You cover.
Or do you want it?
You do. You cover.
Okay, so you want to kind of like smoke and bake in there?
Exactly. Yeah, you cover because you want to trap all those, you know, it's like smoking. Exactly. It's not going to be smoky, but it'll be a little bit smoky.
Right on. Well, Paul, I hope you enjoy grilling on a plank. And Melissa, this was so much fun. I hope you have a great Mother's Day.
Thanks, Francis.
Yeah, have a great time washing your windows.
I'm very excited.
Enjoy the spring.
Thank
I'll talk
you.
To you later.
You too. Bye.
Bye. Melissa Clark is a food columnist for the New York Times and author of many cookbooks. Her latest is about things to make with the youngest cooks in your life. It's called Kid in the Kitchen. And over at our website, we've got a collection of great recipes for Mother's Day. So check it out. Caroline Shin grew up going to her parents' shop in New York City, where at lunchtime was this never-ending stream of takeout from dozens of different cultures. But she spent most of her time at home with her grandma while her parents worked late. And she remembers making Korean food with her. Kimchi, dumplings, acorn jelly. Well, a few years ago, she thought about her grandmother and all the immigrant grandmothers in our country who cook by feel and by memories from a place far away. And so she started the video series Cooking with Granny to help tell those stories. And those conversations made us want to listen in while Caroline talks to her mom, Chungja, about the Korean tradition of myeokguk, a beef and seaweed soup sometimes called birthday soup.
So my birthday was yesterday.
Yes.
Every birthday you make myeokguk. Mm-hmm. Why do you make myeokguk for me?
Okay. In history, the myeokguk is a traditional Korean soup. We make a myeokguk. It's a seaweed soup. And it's for mainly for the woman who delivered the baby. You know that this funny story is from history. They said the whale, the mammal animal, mm-hmm. had a baby. Then after that, the whale is looking for the seaweed and eat it up every time they had a birth.
Yeah.
Korean people learned from that. Then since that, they give a myeokguk for the delivery woman. So it's good for clear the blood and recover the body's condition. Since then, every birthday in Korean people makes soup for the birthday.
You never told me that myeokguk was about postpartum motherhood. You always just made me the myeokguk.
But at the time, you were not married. You didn't have babies. I didn't talk about that one. But usually, mainly, we use myeokguk for the postpartum woman. Especially someone has difficulty to deliver a baby like you. You had a much longer period of the delivery time.
Right? Yeah, it was 32 hours in labor. When I was in the hospital after I gave birth to Chihyun, to Madeline, I didn't think it was going to be that painful and I didn't think it was going to take that long. So even after I gave birth to Maddie, I couldn't walk. Mm-hmm. And so I had to stay in that bed for many days, even longer than the 2 days that a mom is normally allowed to stay in the maternity ward because of the injury that happened. It was really one of the most painful periods of my life. You stepped in and, you know, you were able to provide, you know, this nutrition and this nurturing that is bereft in our, you know, pretty sexist healthcare system. The myeokguk was so important, and it was exactly what I needed, especially because I just felt so helpless and in shock about what had happened. I do wish that there was a lot more attention that was put on postpartum care so that it doesn't just fall into, you know, the hands or the shoulders of, like, my mom, of you. What was it like for you making the myeokguk at home?
When I saw you first time in the hospital, I was crying. I was really cried. So I said, wow, I have to make a myeokguk for my daughter. So next day I made hot soup to serve you.
Yeah. You know, so for Maddie's tol, like for Maddie's first birthday, Maddie got 2 myeokguks. So I made Maddie my
myeokguk. I made one.
Yeah. And Maddie loves myeokguk, which is very important for me because I wanted her. It was really important for me to create, to like forge like a Korean palette for my daughter. But I do things a little bit different. Like, Mom, how do you make your miyeokguk?
Oh, the first thing you have to put dry seaweed in the water.
You said you soak the seaweed. Mm-hmm. You soak the dry seaweed.
Yeah, soak the dry seaweed. So just overnight. Then when I wake up next morning, then I wash it. Then I just boil the beef first in the big pot. So about 40 minutes, I just boil. Now when I boil, I put onion and garlic, chunk of garlic. Then I boil around 40 minutes to 1 hour. Then I put the soaked seaweed. Then boil again, about 40 minutes again. Then I look and taste. And you put some salt and sometimes a little bit of soy sauce. Then you just taste and put some water until the seaweed gets tender.
Yeah. So in your house, there is always a pot boiling or simmering because soup is such a big part of Korean food. Mm-hmm. And so it always smells so good. I always know when I'm in your home because of the smells of food. But I have an Instant Pot and I'm an Instant Pot convert. Do you know what the Instant Pot is? It's like a pressure cooker. Mm-hmm. It's a pressure cooker. So the way I make it, it's, you know, so that I don't have to constantly be looking at the at the flame, at the fire. I just, I soak the beef for a long time to get out the blood, and then I soak the dry seaweed for a while, and then I put everything in the Instant Pot. So it's all the ingredients that you just said, because it's so easy. You just press a button.
That's much easier.
And then you walk away. Mm-hmm. But then I told you I will buy you a pressure cooker. I told you I will buy you an Instant Pot, and you said
no. I have
one. So why don't you use it? Why not?
I don't know when I need that. So, I'm not used to use a slow cooker.
But it's so easy.
Much easier, yes.
Well, you just put all the ingredients and then everything comes out so soft. Mm-hmm. Like,
so you do that way, I do my way.
I know you. And in just a few months, Maddie's birthday is coming up. So you know what that means. It means we have to make our miyeokguk.
So you make one, I make one. Let's let her try miyeokguks both of us make.
Again.
Again.
That's Caroline Shin and her mother, Jungja Shin. Caroline is the founder of Cooking with Granny, a video and event series featuring cooking tips and stories from immigrant grandmothers. You'll find it at cookingwithgranny.tv. Hey, that is our show for the week. We hope you enjoyed it, and we hope that it got you excited to give your mother figure, or your kids a call. And if you're planning on it, to have a lovely celebration with them. Happy Mother's Day, everyone. Talk to you next week. Our show is produced by APM, American Public Media, and is supported by you. Thank you to everyone who contributes and makes this show possible. We literally can't do it without you. You know, you can download our past episodes and take us with you on your walks, in your car, or on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Another thing, we have a great free weekly recipe newsletter called Weeknight Kitchen. You can sign up for it at splendidtable.org. Our show comes together because of our team, Jenny Lubke, Eric Romero, and Sally Swift. Special thanks this week to Jennifer Lai. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is APM, American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.